The formality of the governor's signature is all that is needed to make a temporary moratorium on suction dredging permanent in Oregon. If you're not familiar with the practice, it's panning for gold in a stream done in a modern style. Suction dredges are underwater vacuums that pull up material from the stream bottom and let the heavier stuff, like gold, settle out and stay behind. California banned the practice a few years ago and sent miners north, and Oregon placed a temporary moratorium on suction dredging in many of its own streams. That temporary comes off with the passage of Senate Bill 3. Both houses passed it, and the governor is expected to sign it. We get reaction from the environmental side from Nick Cady, who is the legal director of Cascadia Wildlands. Nick, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So was there any particular surprise here? I mean, once there was a temporary ban, was it widely expected that this would be proposed to be permanent at some point?
Yes, that was the design all along. The original bill that was passed that set in place the moratorium, that was Senate Bill 838, convened a working group to arrive at a permanent solution. And so this bill, Senate Bill 3, is really a product of that working group and that process.
How much of an emotional component might have had any effect on the result, either in time or in the way the bill was written, given that this is the first legislative session after the sudden death of Senator Alan Bates, who was a big supporter of the dredging ban?
Yeah, it was incredibly tragic that in the middle of our efforts on this bill, Senator Bates passed away on the Rogue River, a river that was the focus of kind of suction dredge mining and the reason for this bill in the first place. And so I think the bill had momentum, you know, before his death, but it certainly the bill kind of took a new life after he passed away and became kind of a memorial to his service to the state of Oregon.
Give us the heart of the argument, though, and give us a sense of the history on suction dredging as well, because just about anybody who's watched any sort of Western that depicts the middle of the 19th century has seen pictures of guys with all their tools and hammers and gold pans and that sort of thing, and obviously suction dredging supplanted that.
Right. So this bill does not impact kind of non-motorized mining. You know, it's traditional gold panning is still permitted where people want to go out and take that activity. This is really taking gold mining to a new level. It's using a gas-powered vacuum. You're running a generator floating on a raft in the middle of, you know, usually popular recreation areas. And so it's highly intensive and impactful. And I think the main reason for this bill is its impacts on wild salmon. And, the state of Oregon and California and a lot of these West Coast states spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on salmon habitat restoration to kind of undo some of the damage that we've done over the past 100 years. And suction dredge mining is this recreational, relatively small mining activity that's undoing a lot of this restoration work.
How? I mean, what are some of the things that go on with suction dredging that make it such a concern?
Well, the suction dredging targets these kind of gravel river bottoms, which are areas where salmon will spawn. And so suction dredge mining leads to increased siltation, and it kind of ruins, by churning up this gravel and running it through a sluice, it fills in a lot of this gravel with siltation, it suspends a lot of heavy metals, and kind of leads to a decrease in water quality and habitat and breeding habitat for salmon.
So it clouds the water up and just sort of generally makes the riverbeds a little different from what they'd be otherwise?
Yeah, and there's also a lot of involvement of moving kind of logs or rocks midstream that are often placed there intentionally, that were originally removed in the 1800s, that were placed there intentionally as part of kind of creating pools for salmon breeding. And so, a lot of these effects are very damaging to salmon habitat and kind of pools that have formed. And it basically fills in the cracks between the rocks where salmon eggs would normally exist, and the salmon eggs get coated in siltation and they're not able to breed in many of these reaches where the mining is heavily used.
We're talking about the suction dredge bill in Oregon, which has passed both houses of the legislature and is on the governor's desk awaiting signature. This would make the temporary moratorium on suction dredging in many Oregon streams permanent. You can join the conversation with Nick Cady, the legal director of Cascadia Wildlands. The phone number is 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Nick, I know when we have these discussions, and we did make an effort to reach out to the folks from the Waldo Mining District to see if we could get a response and got no No request, no information back from our request to have them on. So we're not going to hear them directly, but a lot of back and forth about, you know, it's good for the fish, it's bad for the fish, the fish seem to like it, they hang around the dredges, that sort of thing. What kind of data exists, though? I mean, what kinds of hard numbers are there to indicate what the immediate effect and long-term effect of suction dredging is on fish habitat?
Right. This is a relatively new practice. I mean, it first came into focus really in 2009. So there hasn't been extensive research done on the practice yet, but what research has been done has shown that it's going to have detrimental effects on salmon habitat. But of course, you know, if you're going to do a long-term study on the effects on salmon over time, it's going to take more research, and that research is ongoing. But the Army Corps of Engineers and different government agencies that have done research on this have concluded that it will adversely affect salmon habitat. And so that was kind of the primary concern and driver for the bill.
When you say that people just began to look at it around 2009, I mean, the fact is it's been around for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think the activity has been around for a while. I don't think equipment was readily available until the middle of 2000s, and that's when California first became, they first kind of gathered momentum to ban the practice in 2009. And so I don't think it was heavily focused on. It wasn't that pervasive. And then it started kind of gaining in momentum and interest when gold prices increased in the late 2000s.
You know, gold prices are going to have a lot to do with suction dredging at any point in time, aren't they?
Right, right. And so suction dredging is really just targeting kind of, they're not looking for gold nuggets. They're looking for flakes left over from previous mining operations. And so it's not a significant amount of material that they're looking for. But if gold is priced high enough, people will try to get out there and make some money.
All right. So I mean, and for the people who do go out and do suction dredging, do you have an idea whether it's a hobby or livelihood?
That gets debated. I think it's largely hobby mining. Some people have claimed that they make a living off suction dredge mining, but nobody that we've seen testify claims to do it as a full-time occupation.
All right. So are there good side-by-side examples, Nick, or sample sections of streams, places where bans have been in effect to show the results of not dredging there versus the results of dredging there?
Yeah, I think those studies are underway. I don't think extensive research on, you know, like where their sample sizes were experimental and non-experimental have been generally used. I think people are kind of going on what they, the available data out there, because there haven't been kind of statewide approaches or systematic approaches in that way yet. So I'm sure that data is coming and will be out there. The activity is still largely unregulated in Washington, where a lot of the dredgers' increased activity is heading up that way. So it'll be interesting to see the data that comes out in Washington and in Oregon in the future.
So give us the progression now, because California put the ban in place first, and then it sounds like people moved north to Oregon, and then Oregon put its temporary ban in place, now turning permanent. And so miners have continued to travel north, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting activity. You know, it wasn't too common of an activity in Oregon, and then when California passed its ban in 2012, the activity really increased. We saw permits jump from, you know, in the hundreds to nearly 2,000 in a matter of years. And so it suddenly became an issue that was going to have an impact on our waterways.
Would it have been less of an issue, do you think, if California had not placed its own ban into effect?
That's an interesting question. I think the ban definitely drew the activity to Oregon. I'm not sure if the overall numbers would have changed.
All right, Nick, when we talk to miners, and we have had them on the program in the past, I mean, and I've heard them say this many times, that when they're out there working the suction dredges and vacuuming up stuff off the stream bottom, that fish hang around them. They seem to like the process is what they often say, and I wonder what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak to fish enjoying the running of gas generators in the river, but I do... The argument that we have heard a lot is that the dredging is pulling out heavy metals from a lot of these streams. So a lot of these streams, again, were targeted by previous mining efforts, you know, throughout the 1800s and early 1900s, and they left a lot of heavy metals like leads and mercury that are in these streams. And the miners have often claimed that, oh, we're pulling these heavy metals because they're pulling them out through the sluice. But the main concern of the Army Corps of Engineers and a lot of conservation groups have dug into this is that they're resuspending a lot of heavy metals into the water, metals that had previously settled down underneath the gravel beds.
So there are metals available that had not been much of an issue before.
Right, and we're mainly concerned with the kind of the toxic metals like lead and mercury that are going to, you know, they could have severe localized impacts to water quality, and you know, some of these areas, you know, provide drinking water to rural communities, and that would be a huge concern.
So how are were the decisions made? This is not a universal ban. Not every stream in Oregon is included in this, right?
Right. It only applies to essential salmonid habitat, which is, you know, defined by the Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality. There'll be a rulemaking later this year to clarify which streams are included in that. But it's really just areas that are critical to salmon in Oregon. It also covers lamprey habitat as well, which overlaps largely with salmon habitat in Oregon.
We have an email here from Barbara in Grants Pass who writes, the question is, what is considered sensitive fish habitat, and in areas where in-stream mining is not prohibited, will it do less harm? We really don't know the answer to these questions because SB3 prohibits in-stream mining in what's defined as essential indigenous anadromous salmonid habitat, or ESH, essential salmon habitat, and current ESH mapping by the Division of State Lands does not appear to include the habitat of indigenous native anadromous steelhead trout. This is especially evident in the Illinois River Basin, which is host to one of the few populations of strictly wild steelhead in the state of Oregon. In fact, some of the most productive wild steelhead habitat in the Rogue Illinois Basin is shown as ESH on DSL maps. That, again, Division of State Lands, ESH for essential salmon habitat. The Illinois Basin is a river where there's some of the highest concentration of federal mining claims and may have some of the least protection under SB3, or at least it remains to be seen. The Illinois River winter steelhead were proposed for protection under the Endangered Species Act in the 1990s. That from Barbara in Grants Pass. So a lot to take in there, but she's indicating that there are some potential holes in Senate Bill 3, places where the protections don't exist and could or should.
Barbara brings up a great point. So I think the definition, we believe the definition of ESH includes that steelhead habitat, and that DSL and the Department of State Lands has kind of wrongly excluded that from current mapping efforts. And so the mapping process, which will occur later this year in a rulemaking, which will be open to public comment so people like Barbara can weigh in on that process with the Department of State Lands and the Department of Environmental Quality. But we're hoping to include those steelhead areas in that mapping effort. So she'll have an opportunity to weigh in at that time.
So I was going to ask about the procedure from here then, because the bill itself is not terribly thick, I think 2 or 3 pages. So that would indicate that if you're going to indicate which streams it's going to apply to, that would be done through a separate set of regulations done separately from the passage of the bill itself.
Right. There is, as Barbara mentioned, there is an existing definition of ESH habitat that's kind of a broad map drawn across the state. And so the state's going to, after the passage of this bill, the state agencies are going to go through a process to take a fresh look at what is defined as ESH and make sure that's tightened up in the wake of the passage of this bill.
Now, I wonder if as time goes on, I mean, you mentioned that studies are underway, but not a lot of real good conclusive stuff in hand right now. I mean, in places where the suction dredge ban has been in place as a temporary moratorium before it becomes permanent with this bill, I mean, have there been some anecdotal evidence? Has there been some anecdotal evidence of fish coming back?
There's been a lot of, as you mentioned before, with the miners enjoying having fish enjoy the presence of the dredges, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that get tossed around, but yeah, very little systematic study has been conducted. The few studies that have come out and have been peer-reviewed have all found negative impacts to salmon. As far as a long-term study on long-term impacts, you know, it appears readily obvious to the conservation groups that if you're disturbing gravel beds and filling in cracks with siltation, you know, similar effects that, you know, logging activities near streams have, this is going to have negative impacts on salmon breeding and return levels. But I think it's going to require, you know, decades further down the line to see the true impacts of salmon. You know, as we've seen with logging impacts to streams, it's taken decades to reap what we've sown.
So when you're making conservation efforts in streams, though, I mean, how can you be sure which effort is bearing some benefit, some return? I mean, given the cyclical nature of salmonid life and all the other things that can affect it, everything from suction dredging to logging to El Nino and ocean temperatures and all that.
Right. No, it's an incredibly complex process with salmon, and they are one of these very, you know, difficult species to manage for, because really all we can control is what's going on the land base. And so, I mean, you can control commercial fisheries too, but that's somewhat out of the state of Oregon's hands. And so this is kind of what Oregon can do, is take this precautionary approach, prohibit dredging, an activity that by all measures looks to have a very negative impact on salmon runs, but we probably won't experience that negative impact until several years down the line, at least. And so it's difficult to measure, it's difficult to anticipate, but with a species like salmon, when you're dumping, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars into restoration, it would be awful to permit, you know, a small-scale hobby mining activity to undo a lot of that work.
Now, given that the streams will be identified through rulemaking, is there some flexibility there then to either include more streams later or undesignate some streams?
Yeah, if certain streams become blocked, they could be removed from ESH, and if certain streams are opened, you know, there's some dam removal efforts going on in the Klamath Basin, they could be included in the new definition. Yes, it would certainly be flexible to. It's meant to protect where the fish are.
So did you get all you wanted in the bill? Was this essentially what you were looking for when the legislative session started?
No, there's a few remaining concerns, and the bill was the product of this working group. It was a product of compromise, and so there are a few things that we did not get. And one of the main concerns is there's a lot of suction dredge activity, you know, in southwestern Oregon and the Illinois River Basin and the South Umpqua and the Rogue, but there is a lot in northeastern Oregon as well. And that's where some of Oregon's few remaining bull trout populations exist. And those went unprotected by the bill. And so if dredging activity kind of occurs in bull trout habitat, there's a lot of remaining questions about the state's liability under the Endangered Species Act.
All right. We'll keep an ear to the ground and try to figure out when there are sessions available for people to talk about rulemaking for suction dredge operations on Oregon streams, which will be banned permanently under Senate Bill 3, where they were under a moratorium under the previous version. Nick Cady is the legal director at Cascadia Wildlands. Thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.